And welcome to the Issue Is Podcast Extra. I'm Alex Michaels, and this is where we get to hang out with some of our favorite panelists, get to know them better. We got some of the most interesting people that come in here. And this week, we've got Carlos Mencia is here. Welcome.
Yeah. Love the name, by the way, bro. Love your first name.
Oh, it's so awesome. Thank you so much. Carlos, of course, you know from The Mind of Mencia back in the day on Comedy Central. He's got his own podcast now, The Journey with Carlos Mencia, which you can listen to. He's all over the place every weekend with stand-up. If you're downloading this right away, this weekend he's at the Irvine Improv, but you can find out more about his dates at carlosmencia.com. See a lot of his content there as well. Carlos, thanks for being here. Thanks for doing this.
Man, thanks for having me, bro. Appreciate it, man.
First, I guess, as a fellow podcaster, what do you love about podcasting?
You know what? I love the fact that the medium is taken, so we do a podcast, but we record it. So we go live to YouTube while we record it.
Oh, fun.
So that's one part of it that's fun. So it's kind of like a TV show type thing. So with that, if I'm talking about a subject, I can post up a picture and, you know, talk about that. And then the fact that, you know, if I don't find something interesting, the podcast will only be 30 minutes long. But if it's a week that's got a lot of stuff that I want to talk about, I can go on for an hour or two. There's no point where you have to end or begin. I love the fluidity of it and your ability to just be extemporaneous and go wherever that moment is going to take you. I love that.
I want to talk about your life story because I think it's really interesting.
Cool.
But I want to start, though, since this is sort of a political show.
Sure.
With just, you know, where does your passion for politics come from?
My passion comes from the fact that immigrants like me who were born in other countries, we don't just believe the words, you know, in the Constitution. We literally bleed them. I mean, most people in this country are here because they were born here. I made a choice to leave another country to be a part of this country. This is my choice. And so the process to me is just incredible. From the outside looking in, I think the hard part for me is to listen to people speak about politics, not know. You know, when I hear somebody going, let's not get into the weeds, I say to myself, isn't that where we're supposed to be, though? Isn't that where we're supposed to be as Americans? Aren't we supposed to be able to know that? Like, do I expect everybody to read every single thing? No. But do I expect my legislators to know what's in the bill before they vote for it? Yeah. And so when I see that intellectual laziness, I just feel like we have this amazing country, this amazing experiment, this fragile, beautiful republic, you know, and I don't know that we're treasuring it the way we should.
Well, you talk about your immigrant background. So you were born in Honduras, right? Carlos, not your first name.
No. Ned was my birth name.
And you are have a whole lot of siblings.
One of 18. I'm the 17th born of 18. Yes.
Sort of, how does that shape your worldview, or bring us back to your childhood?
You know
childhood?
What that does? It makes me not understand anybody on the left or the right that doesn't understand compromise. Mm. I don't know. I am foreign to the idea of we're going to have a Republican Senate or a Republican majority or Republican in order to get past, or Democratic all the way. I don't understand that. I grew up having to talk to different people. Like, okay, we had one television. We had, you know, all these people that wanted to watch different shows. Now, granted, luckily we lived in L.A., so we were in the middle of somewhere where there was ABC, NBC, CBS. You know, we did have Channel 9, Channel 11, Channel 13, Channel 52. Right. So we had a lot of that stuff. But we had to compromise. You know, my sister really, really loved to watch Soul Train, and it was at 10 o'clock in the morning. I really loved watching ABC and Hong Kong Fui and those. And so, you know, we had to go, okay, I'm going to watch this and then you watch that. We compromised on everything. And so it helped me.
How'd you compromise on the bathroom situation? How does that work?
One bathroom. All right, one bathtub. We have 1.5 bathrooms, right? So we grew up 3 bedrooms and then a toilet downstairs and a bath upstairs. And 8 women were born in a row before me. So me and my father like had to get very creative on when to take showers and when to get Because, you know, like what happens with women is one goes in, then two go in, then three are inside, then one comes out, but there's still two inside. And you know, me and dad are outside just like, and I'm looking at my dad like, bro, this is your house. Because my dad was that, you know, this is my house, it's my castle. And I'm like, doesn't feel like it right now, dad. And I remember there was a time where me and my dad would literally go in the backyard with the water hose and, you know, wash our face and brush our teeth. And we just kind of gave up because it was them. So instead of taking a shower in the morning, me and my dad would take a shower at night to get it out of the way and hope that we had a decent hair day the next day, because we just there was nothing we could do. There was one bathtub and that was it. And they had it. And there's nothing we could do about it.
So what's the age difference between everybody?
My mom first had her kid, the first one when she was 15 and the last one when she was 45.
And so all those kids are hers. She gave birth to 18 kids?
No, there's a couple of them that are just my father's, and there's a couple of hers that are just hers. But all of my 18 siblings are blood related. There's no stepkids.
That's wild.
I know, man. It's crazy. But it's normal for me.
Yeah.
Like when I go home and there's nobody in it, I feel so alone. Mm. So it's I need that. I need kids. I need the fervor. I need the energy. I love that. I love kids' energy. They want to change the world. They believe that everything is possible. And I, you know, I'm 51 years old, and I still want to cling to that. You know, I don't want to be that, the world is over. Oh, who cares? Run away. I still want to have that little spark inside of me that believes that, you know, after everything, we still end up, at least, even if nothing else, falling in the right direction. Because the majority of us are good people.
Yeah. I mean, that you could like do three basketball teams just with your family.
Yeah. I mean, we had three basketball teams. We had a possible football team. Yeah. Definitely a baseball team. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had it.
Got a nice bench, too.
Except it was like a bunch of old guys and a bunch of young guys. So it's in between where all the girls were born that we just like, you know. But two of my sisters are like really tomboy. So, you know, they made up for it.
East L.A., right? That's where you grew up with. Memories of East L.A., thoughts on East L.A. now, which is sort of gentrified some.
Yeah, it has. It's so bizarre to go back there now because it's such a different place to where I grew up. You know, when I grew up, it was, okay, here's how it was. We were about maybe 1.5-2 miles a walk from where I was. I had to go to school. And I remember we'd wake up every morning and go, okay, how do we walk to school? And what that meant was we had to gather information on what happened last night. Did anybody get shot? Did anybody get stabbed? Did any two gangs go at each other? And if we figured that out, then we went, oh, okay, we got to take Atlantic and go around this neighborhood, or we got to go straight and go through, not through that neighborhood, because, you know, we knew that there was some kind of conflict happening. And so, but that was normal. I remember I was doing, I think it was Nightline. I was doing an interview on Nightline, and I go, yeah, we were standing right here one time. I remember they shot at us, and the car was here, and they shot at us in that general direction. And I went, you know what, let's go check this out. And we went over there, and the bullet holes from decades ago were still there. And I went, oh, my God, look, there's a bullet hole right there. And we saw a bullet hole, and it was just – for me, I was actually happy. Like, hey, look, there's a bullet hole. They shot at us. You know? And everybody on the crew was like, dude, they shot at you? What is wrong? Yeah. Why are you happy? It was just the way life was. It wasn't, you know, we would, in normal cul-de-sacs, you play, and if a car comes, everybody goes, car, you move the nets out of the way or whatever it is that you're playing on. And, well, with us, it was like, car coming, slow, dive. You know what I mean? They're going to shoot at us, you know. It wasn't stop playing. It was save your life. But that was normal to us. Yeah. That wasn't, it, you know. And the horrible part was there was no sense of safety when the cops showed up. I think that's what I miss. Like today when I see a policeman in my neighborhood, I feel like, oh, cool, you know, nobody's going to be doing anything stupid. But when I was a kid and a cop showed up, we were like, man, is he going to make us stand on the wall again? Like, really? We didn't do anything. And whoop, whoop. Okay. We know the drill. You know, that there was no sense of they were protecting us because we were the good kids. Mm. And so if they're hassling us, who are they protecting?
You didn't feel so there was no trust.
There was no trust. And now there is. Now, you know, the cop stops and people come out and they talk to each other. It's a different environment. And I'm grateful that it's evolved into something different.
What's it like for you now living, because you've been very successful and had a big show and made some money and living in sort of a different world than what you grew up in. Do you look at that world and people that live in that world that have never lived in any other world and see them like you don't understand? I mean, is there a difference in perception?
The difference is, well, first of all, I live in Encino, which has an incredible amount of Jewish people and Palestinians. And here's what I gotta say. For some reason, I don't know how it works in the Gaza Strip, but if you put them on Ventura and White Oak, they get along. That's all I'm saying, man. That's all we need to do is transplant all those people and put them there, and they will be happy. I mean, literally, I live two blocks from a block that has like three Palestinian places, two Jewish places, a kosher meat market. And they all get along. Right. They're on the streets talking to each other. You know what I mean? The guy with the yarmulke, the other guy. And everything seems totally cool and normal. So my perspective is like, why is it that here we get along? What is it about this environment that makes us, you know, not want to fight each other?
What do you think it is?
I think that it's hope. Mm. You know, I think that what Donald Trump has done, and I don't know if this has been articulated by a lot of people, but I think that what Donald Trump has done is he's taken away hope from a certain segment of America. And that's it, it's not the way he, it's what he says, governance, all that stuff aside. It's the hope part. It's, you know, it's the part of us that believe, even though bad things happen and, you know, the world is what it is, that we're gonna be better off tomorrow. And that hope for somebody of color, an immigrant like me,
right,
you know, is struck in the face when you have a president, you know, who says, I'm not as good of an immigrant to this country than Sven Jorgensen from Norway.
Right.
That's hurtful on a very basic level. And we're not even talking about illegal immigration. We're just saying when the president says that I come from a shithole country and, you know, he wishes that people that immigrated here were of different facial features than I and more Anglo-Saxon. I say to myself, you know, I've paid into this country millions of dollars. My parents at one point were on welfare. I have given the state of California itself way more money than my parents ever took out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
I am exactly what this country believes in when it comes to hopes and dreams and the immigrant and all that kind of stuff. But I have hope still. You know, a lot of people don't.
Take me back to November 8th, 2016, because that's the night that Trump wins.
Yes.
There, you know, when Trump first comes down the elevator, he says Mexicans, you know, sending their rapists and murderers, and some I believe are good people.
Correct.
But a lot of people didn't take him seriously, right? They didn't think he was going to win. Some people called him a joke at the time.
Right.
I was in New York at the Hillary Clinton headquarters at the Javits Center, surrounded by a lot of Latinos,
yes,
blacks, gays,
yes,
women,
yes,
who were all in tears,
yes,
because they felt that the country was sending a message,
right,
that I don't care about you.
Right.
What was your takeaway that night? How did you feel when you saw that not only was Trump in there, but that the country voted him in?
I have been following these trends for a long time. There's a book about it. I think it's called America's Radio or America's Talk Radio. I remember when that type of talk radio came out, when Rush Limbaugh went from just being a local to everywhere.
Right.
The anger, the faux anger, the newstainment part of it, that I went, okay, this was bound to happen. This was, to me, I didn't take it personal. I just thought it was a reaction to 8 years of a black president that a certain part of America went, okay, let's get back to normalcy and hire and get the whitest guy who can really fight for us and represent us. Listen, it's got to be tough that when a white mother and a black father have a kid, that kid is black. So the white identity of that child is pretty much lost. And so can I sympathize with, you know, some people in this country who are fearing the change, the color change of this country, the genetic change of this country, and on top of that, you know, becoming a minority. So I talked to a really good friend of mine, and I asked him, do you think that you're afraid that the day we become powerful, we're going to treat you the way you've treated us?
Mm.
And he said, there's some of that, man. I mean, look, white people haven't, you know, we have a record in this country, and it's not unblemished. And so if you guys become the majority and start passing laws and make it more difficult for us to blah, 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 then, and I think that was a reaction. But if nothing else, like I say, I live in California. You know, this is the case here, and yet we're the, what, fourth largest economy in the world? We're doing well as a state. I mean, you know, we have our issues, but, you know, I mean, no more or less than anywhere else. So I think that the diversity is a good thing, but I think there's a fear of that. And understandably so, even though I think it's a little bigoted, you know.
Do you think that Latinos are underrepresented in terms of power versus their numbers? Because if you look at the numbers of Latinos, Latinos could be the majority in this country, the next generation.
Yes.
But I think, and is that some of that the fear of deportation? Is some of that sort of a different mindset in terms of people? Because you look at like African Americans, outside voice, if you look at the number of people that are there.
Correct.
Jewish Americans, outside voice in terms of the numbers that there are.
Yes. But it's easy, you know, you're African American, your identity is mostly from, I argue all the time that the most American people in this country are African Americans, right? Because the rest of us brought something here, right? My people brought tortillas, and those people brought spaghetti, and those people brought Chinese food, and those people brought pho, and those people brought... The African-American culture today in this country is only based on Americanisms.
Yeah.
There's no leftover. There's no... They came here and they were told, change your name, learn English. I don't care where you came from. So all that died. So they are the actual... children of America, 100% through and through.
And they didn't come here by choice.
Exactly.
Right.
So you put all that together and you kind of see it and you go, wow, okay, they have a shared experience. The problem with Latinos is, okay, as you see, Mexico put more Border Patrol agents on their southern border. So you have a country of people that have come to America illegally telling people south of their border, you can't come here illegally. So that begins to get a little bit like, wait a minute, really? Yeah. A Mexican is telling me not to cross a border? Seriously? And so, you know, there is a difference between Honduras and Guatemala and Panama and Costa Rica. And, you know, when you get together in this country, we don't have a solidarity because we have a lot of leftovers. You know what I mean? There's a song in Spanish that these guys sing. They're called Gente de Zona. And he, in the middle of the song, says, if you are a Latino, pull out your flag, right? And so that, to me, represents how we are in this country. Yeah, we're Latinos, but from where?
Mm.
And then all these different flags come up. So it would be like trying to say that people from France who come to this country and people from Italy who come to this country somehow share something, and they don't. They're very different backgrounds, very different cultures. And so because of that, we get divided. Now, let's just say you were running for office and you said to me, how do I get to the Latinos? I would have to say to you, here are the 30 different things that you have to do, because there is no one place that I can send you to. You know, Telemundo has different people than Univision and what their mixture of Spanish to English is, right? So then I send you to La Raza, where they play crazy Mexican authentic music, but, you know, how many of them? And then their kids are listening to what? Maybe Kiss FM, maybe Power 106, maybe K-Day, you know?
Right.
So we're separated in all these different places. So even marketing has a problem getting to us. And so I don't know that there's an answer other than and then once we acculturate, right? So one, two generations in, Now we just feel American. And why are you talking about burritos and tacos? Everybody eats that. Why am I the guy? Because right. My name is Carlos, you know, so it's a very...
Or it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had to change my name to Carlos because when I first started doing stand-up, my experience was so ethnic, but my name was so non-ethnic.
Right, Ned.
Yeah.
And so Mitzi Shore, right, at the comedy store?
Yeah, she said, you can't be an angry Mexican named Ned. And I said, I'm not Mexican. And she paused and went, well, you can't be an angry Mexican. And I said, why do you keep calling me Mexican? I'm from Honduras. And she said, trust me, you're Mexican. And from that point on,
You were a Mexican named Carlos?
Well, not that I was a Mexican, but even when I tell people I'm from Honduras, they go, what part of Mexico is that? So you just right. You just don't even fight it anymore. Yeah. But
wasn't one of your parents from Mexico?
My mother's from Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's like my issue was when I would say I'm not Mexican, Mexicans would be like, well, what's your mom? Mexican? Then you're Mexican. And then Hondurans would be like, wait a minute, you weren't born there. You know, so there was a fight of like who wanted to claim me. So, but within the structure of all this, I realized, you know, first of all, I wanted to be a stand-up. I wanted to be funny.
Right.
That's it. And then all of a sudden, with a little bit of success comes, hey, you better represent us well. It's like, whoa, what do you mean represent you? I'm just trying to be funny. Like, it's hard enough to write a joke, period. Now you're telling me that they have to be driven from some agenda, I don't think that I'm okay with that. And they're like, yeah, but you know, once you go out there, man, if you succeed, then they give a chance to somebody else. And I didn't really understand that until I went to Birmingham, Alabama, was the first Latino to perform at the Stardom Comedy Club. And I remember coming back 2 years later and I saw that they were bringing Pablo Francisco. And then I talked to the owner and he was like, yeah, man, you do pretty well. So we said, maybe let's try another one. And I went, oh, this is what they were talking about. This is what all those activists were trying to say, that even though, you know, I might not be consciously thinking of this stuff, that if I'm successful, it will help these other guys be successful.
Well, responsibility. And let's talk about that because you're now far enough removed from the mind of Mencia,
right,
where it was like a formative experience for a generation of people that are now old enough to be professional comedians.
Yes.
Do you have people come up to you and reach out to you that say, man, seeing you allowed me to see me and it inspired me to do this?
Yeah. The majority of what I get is you inspired me to go to college. Those are the majority of the ones that I get because I talk a lot about stupidity and intellectual laziness. And I think I would have bet all the money that I could ever make in the world that in 2019 with the advent of a phone and Alexa and Google and everything that you can ask to give you information that there would be a flat earther movement. I never would have thought that we would get that stupid that quickly. And yet it's a thing. There's a flat earther movement. No, it's not huge. I get it. But just the fact that even exists. And so when I tell people, stop complaining, like I do a joke where I say, somebody said to me, an illegal alien took my job. And my response was, how bad was your interview? And it's a thing that makes you kind of go, well, who did you lose your job to? You lost your job to a guy that can't speak English in an English speaking country.
Yeah.
Like human resources literally said, do we have the number to that one guy that answered none of our questions? He got the job.
Right.
You know, I have had experiences, right? And I do a really, really long joke about this lady that I met. Her name is Maria. We've befriended each other. I met her at a McDonald's in New York. And her accent was so thick that when she said crispy chicken, it sounded like creepy chicken. And I just could not stop laughing. We're in the car just dying because she like, you want the creepy chicken? And we just could not stop. But here's where it turned. One of my friends tried to get mad, right? Tried to point her out as this is one of the reasons Trump became president. Mm. Because of people like this. They come here, they don't learn the language. And then I said, that's not the problem. The problem in this country is that she was the best applicant. They didn't turn away a Harvard graduate. Mm. They didn't turn away somebody with impeccable English. Whoever didn't get that job at the end of all the interviews was worse than the lady that says creepy chicken and pronounced it fellatio fish. I'm not kidding you. And that to me
very
is
popular
where,
order.
Very popular order. My friend Randy ordered five.
But get a lot of money for that in certain parts of town.
Yeah, but my point to the whole joke is it's like, why are we getting mad at the people that are trying?
Yeah.
That the people that are attempting.
So we
why
should
don't
do better.
Get mad at the lazy people that fell short from that. That's the bar. Creepy chicken is the bar.
Well, and then you look at that ICE raid of the chicken processing plant in Mississippi. How many people are lining up for that job?
Well, here's the point.
Yeah.
And it's good that you brought that up. Because one of the big stories is, to date, at this very moment, they still haven't filled all those positions.
Right.
And the ones that they have filled were filled with guys that kind of look like me, have a thick accent, but they gave you a social security card that said their name is Jacob Johansson. Like, we all know. We all know that the little short dark guy who was like, no, I will kill the chicken, he's not Johansson.
So who was your Carlos Mencia when you were a kid?
My father.
That was it.
There was
nobody on TV.
There was nobody on TV I wanted to be like. My father is the funniest guy I've ever met in my life. He does what I do off stage. I can't do that. I can't speak to people the way I do on stage, off stage. Mm-hmm. The world is not like that for me. Like, I can't watch those types of shows where you know, people that are unsuspecting all of a sudden get bombarded with this. I don't like that. This is your space and your time. When you come to my shows, that's different. I'm on stage. I'm going to say whatever I want. You don't like it? Leave. Really. It's not. But I don't get that kind of interaction. And so I'm different that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm inspired by a man who came to this country, made enough money, went back to Central America, bought a farm, bought a ranch, and he found his happiness. And his happiness was in what he did for a living. So when I discovered stand-up, my family had an intervention for me. Mm. I remember showing up at my mom's house on a Sunday, seeing all these cars, and I go, nobody told me there was a party. And my brother, who's an alcoholic, said, oh, man, you don't know. Watch out. It's for you. And I went in there, and they all were just bombarding me with, you have a degree. What is wrong with you? Why are you? What is comedy? I don't get it. Why can't you tell jokes at your job? Mm. And by the time I got to my dad, there were so many people that had spoken to me that he started drinking. So by the time I got to him, he had a nice buzz going. And I looked at my dad and I said, you're the one that said to me, you came to this country so that I could be whatever I wanted to be. How do you feel about me becoming a comedian? And those words hit him hard, and he looked at everybody else, and he went, if he wants to be a clown, let him juggle. And that was it. But that's my dad. My dad's wanted me to find my happiness. He didn't care how much money I made. He didn't care about any of that.
Right.
The greatest moment my father has ever experienced was in 2006, I did a commercial, a Budweiser commercial for the Super Bowl. A few months later, I was throwing a party and they found out about it. There's a ring. We go outside. We hear beep, beep, beep. My dad runs out and goes, what is this? I go, I have no idea, Dad. Guy gets out of the truck and goes, Mr. Mencia, we found out that you're having a party and you were so gracious with your time with us. Thank you. And he pulled up the little slides on the side and revealed all this alcoholic stuff, all his beverages. And he goes, you could have whatever you want that you need for the party. And I heard like, then I looked back and my dad's, he's tearing up. A little tear's coming down his eye. And I go, what is going on with you, Dad? And he's like, you made it. You made it. The Budweiser truck is in our house. And I was like, wow, this is it. This is where I made it for you.
Yeah.
And so he has never fallen for the traps. He never cared about the traps. You know, I've met Obama. He never asked about it. I've met, you know, other friends. Never asked him. Never any of that stuff. You know, all he cares about is the simple things in life. You know, are you happy? Do you have enough for a six pack? And that's it. So he's an amazing role model. When people meet my father and say that they see a little bit of me or of him in me, that's when I go, I did it. I can die. I can literally die.
Well, that seems like a nice place to wrap up. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
You know what, man? To the people that listen, you guys are pretty much junkies to some of this stuff because you're listening. But, you know, if we can find a way to get the average American to just be a little more informed of the decisions that they make, I would like that. I just think that so much of what's happening today is misinformation, lack of information, and people's inability to have a news source that you know is to be able to say fake news is just so bad because it just can negate any actual real thing. And so I just hope that people get educated to what's going on.
Well, that is the purpose of this show. The purpose right. of the issue is the purpose of what I try to do every day.
Right.
And I appreciate you helping us in that effort.
Yeah, man. Appreciate
so
it,
Carlos was a part of the TV version of the show, which is also posted as a podcast. That's with Joe Walsh, who's running for president as a Republican, Jessica Yellen, Alicia Krauss, and Carlos. So we hope you download that. We hope you go to carlosmencia.com to check out information about his podcast. Go to get the tickets, the whole thing. Carlos, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, really
appreciate
man.
It.
Nice to meet you, brother.
Well done. That's The Issue Is for now. Please leave us a review, and thank you so much for listening.
Bye.